Brad, the first question that came in from Amy, when you drink amino acids, do you have to chug them or can you mix them into something and sip it? That's a great question, but usually when you take in depends on what you're talking about. So if you're talking about sipping it over the course of the day, you want to think of it like a meal or an event because what you're doing is trying to get a certain amount of essential amino acids at once. So rather than dripping it like an IV in small amounts, you want to kind of hit that amount either because you're doing it after a workout or you're doing it before, or you're doing it as a, you know what, I didn't hit my protein quota today, so I'm going to get this in before I go to bed. I would try to drink a glass of it all at once. Moses. Okay. Next up. Last week, and this one's from Karen, I asked your recommendation after completing Stronger 3, having approximately 30 minutes in the morning for exercise. Curious to know if your recommendation would change if there was no time restraint for a 55-year-old. I'm going to tell you right now that if you tell me you're 55, 45, 35, 65, it does not matter to me. I know 85-year-olds who do an Ironman triathlon, so your age is irrelevant. Your capacity is what matters to me. And that means you could be a beginner at 35, you could be a beginner at 75, or be much more advanced at 75. So, what's more important to me in none of the things we look at for the HALO assessment is age even a part of it. So, your hormone status, perimenopause, right in transition, or postmenopause, that matters. A little bit about what I'd want you to focus on. The way you feel. Do you have good energy during the day? You're sleeping really great. Your digestion and elimination are good. Your focus, your brain is firing on all cylinders. Those things matter. If you have limitations within that, fatigue all the time, aches and pains, those kinds of things really do matter. If you're not sleeping well, that's going to matter what I would suggest to you. Your activity age, if you are 3 months or less, you're 3 to 12 months, or you're over 3 months. And then the biggest outcomes that you want. What are you after? If I know that, then we really can drill down on this would be if it were up to me and it wasn't based on time, this is what I'd say to you. I can give you that, and then we can play with time too. So for all of you, I just restated that. And we can say that again if it's helpful, because I think the more you hear it, the more you will be able to kind of self-prescribe your exercise plan. You will be able to make the right choice, not just big picture, but maybe this week or this month when things have changed because a bigger stressor popped into your life or disappeared. Let's be optimistic. That's probably the better question. So I'm going to say if there was no time restraint for 55 post-menopause, 3 years of inconsistent weight training. Okay. So we're going to say, I really need to know though, is that less than 3 months of consistent training? Can you tell me that? Because where I need to know is how long have you been consistent? Less than 3 months, 3 to 12 months, that would be the ideal. And thank you. You recommended Stronger 5 or 7 last time, and I'm going to look for your answer to those questions here so that I can give you a good response. So, Karen, if you want to drop that in the chat or really quickly unmute, feel free to do it, unless you're going to be unruly. You can unmute, okay? So feel free to just converse. But those are the things that I need. And that'll give me a little bit more information. Karen, I'm going to give you a second to respond and type that answer in. So how long have you been consistent? 3 to 12 months. Perfect. Okay. So, if time were no object, all right, but can you also say no other issues? So, digestion, elimination, you're sleeping really well, you have great energy, that's not a problem. Is that the case? As long as that's true, if that were true for you, then what I would suggest is, I love Stronger Three. So you've just done it and you want some variety, you want some change. If you want a push play and I do it with you, kind of a workout that would rule out some things, but you could still do Stronger 10, which is it's based on demos to do at home or in the gym. And we have right now five total body workouts. So you could use those five. Six, seven, and eight will be on their way very shortly. So that would be another option. 10, if you go into the Facebook group, and you may not be there, but here's what you would find. People are saying, I've come to that, back to that one again and again. I really love it because it's built for if you're a beginner, this is your reps. If you're kind of in that 3 to 12 months, here's your reps. And if you're more advanced, here's your sets and reps. So it's very appropriate for when you start and when you advance. And you also have choices based on what's happening in your schedule. You can choose to do two total body workouts every week, or you could do a total body and then do an upper and a lower body on two separate days later in the week, meaning you'd have three strength days. But if you're a woman who's postmenopausal and you need a little bit more volume and stimulus for holding or gaining lean muscle mass, you may want to try that. And it would be only if I feel really good, I'm sleeping really good, I function on all cylinders. So we would never pour on more if we are tired all the time, and or we're getting symptoms that we're not sleeping because of stress. That's not a time to push the accelerator on more because you're probably going to get more fit doing less in those instances where we've got more stress. The exercise we do should be ideally helping to hold on to muscle but decrease stress. And walking intermittently is a girl's best friend when that's the case. So I'm hoping that helps. Karen, I'm going to scroll down and just see if there's any other response from you. I think we got it. So, I would say five and seven are still great choices. I would say you're going to exercise a little bit longer if you did Stronger 10, and you could do those total body workouts with me if you prefer that. So it's a little bit of preference as well on do I want to push play and have you there? Some of you, many of you actually say, if you're not doing it with me, I'm not going to do it. And I get that. It's like you can see the laundry, there's too much other distraction. And so you may not follow through unless you really like independence and you're much more familiar now. You may be surprised that at some point you come back to that and do try it with the demo videos. Alice said, how do you improve the actually Alice VIP? She gets a gold star for filling out the rename. She did awesome. Okay. So, how do you improve VO2 max? I admit I have been out of the loop for years. So, Alice, did you see the masterclass this week? It answers that question. Okay. So, clearly, you either were there or weren't listening or missed it. But that is already up in the app. If you want to watch it, go to that too. But I'll give you the short answer. If you want to get there in the shortest amount of time, the fastest way, if you're tolerant of it right now. So again, remember, if you're already tired, I don't want anybody to hear, go do HIIT if you're already tired, right? But if you're like, I've got good energy, I'm feeling good, I've got a base of training, so I know I'm not going to risk injury by doing more. If you're ripe and ready for it, high intensity interval training or the sprint interval training that really is that 20 to 30 seconds to breathlessness, alternating with full recovery, whatever it takes. So 2 or 3 minutes is perfectly fine as long as you do those repeats. If you do that for 5 or 6 weeks and you had not been doing that, you can improve your VO2 max very significantly, probably 10 to 15% in a very short time. Now, some of you might say, I shouldn't probably layer in two or three times of that right away within that short time frame. So it might take you a little bit longer, but you can mix that up with other things. And that's going to be the fastest return on your investment. The getting breathless is the piece that most of us are missing. If you've been walking, you've been doing weight training. But here's the other thing I want you to hear. This is from the research of Dr. Ellen Langer and her students way back when. She's now a professor in her own right, but Aaliyah Crumb. They both have studied this and found the benefit of placebo effect. So in this case, it's not a placebo in that we're giving you a false thing and then we're giving you the real thing, either or, but it is the knowledge that what you're doing actually helps you will help you more. It amplifies your results. So that said, whatever you're already doing, even doing the base training of going for a walk with an intensity that you know you're exercising, but you're not getting breathless. It's a, some people are calling it zone two. I don't like that term because it means so many things, but it's, you can talk, but you can't sing. It's a little bit of nose and mouth breath, both. You can build your VO2 by having that solid base. It's just going to take much longer, and you probably will plateau at a point where it's not going to get more or get higher. But that base is really where fitness or elite performance happens. It won't, you can't go up to the penthouse if you don't have that basement. So remember that most of your time still should be spent there and mixing that up. The study I quoted last week was resistance training all by itself. If you just have added that, you're doing it consistently within about 21 weeks, 13% increase in your VO2 max. So gaining more muscle, we don't always think strength training, but gaining more muscle helps deliver more oxygen to those working muscles and then they can extract it. And those two pieces are part of VO2 max. Combining resistance training and some form of cardio within your week, HIIT will be the best, increases VO2 in about the same time, 21 to 24 weeks, 21%. So know that if you're already doing it, your VO2 has already had a big boost, and it may be just that little bit of extra will make it even better. So I hope that was helpful, but great question. You teed me up at a time when I knew that by heart. So there you go. Thank you. Katie says, how much effort does general pain, for example, daily lower back pain or consistent arthritis pain, have on one's cortisol level? That's a good question. So, to give you a definite number, I'd probably have to go and dig in some research to really give you a correlation. But I would say the big answer probably comes back to any one of us individually. I would ask you the question of, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, how often are you thinking about it every day? How frequently does it impact your day, your mood, what you do? And the higher that number is, the more I would say it probably does affect your cortisol levels significantly. And so that, maybe isn't measured by a study so much. So I'm sure there is a study out there relating or correlating pain to cortisol levels. And I don't know the cause if the lower back pain is something that you're dealing with, but if any of you, 80% of us do have lower back pain, but if you do, I would say this over and over to anybody, and you guys have this in the membership, at least you do in Essentials and or and I take that back, in VIP, you have this in your challenge. You have the glute challenge. And if your lower back or your knees are struggling or suffering, one of the first things that I would suggest that you do is work on your glute strength, your hip mobility, and your glute strength together, because it's usually that joint upstairs or downstairs that is negatively impacted. And sometimes we go too quickly to the joint that hurts and say, for lower back pain, for instance, I need to stretch my lower back or I need to work on my core. And actually, glutes are your core, by the way. So in one lump, we sweep in that. But it usually is something else. So with lower back pain, it could either be glutes are weak or your hips are tight and or your upper back is tight and not mobile. So if we stack the joints and we stood and we went from your feet to your ankles to your knees to your hips to your, I know it sounds like a song, but I won't sing to you. Each of those, every other one is supposed to be stable, mobile, stable, mobile. The lower back is supposed to be stable. The hips are supposed to be mobile, and the upper back is supposed to be mobile. Lots of rotation should happen up here. So when we sit a lot at computers and keyboards, and we sit a lot, our hips are sitting a lot, we get tight and immobile at the hip and the upper back. Then your body has to beg, borrow, or steal it from a stable joint. And in the instance of lower back, so the one of the worst places is a golfer. So if they are tight in their upper back, imagine they can't rotate in their backswing and their hips are not moving the way that they should. Guess what takes it? Because we're pivoting on the lower back. So lower back pain is very common among golfers because if they take a practice swing, they may be swinging 200 times on one side in a round. So you either better get better so you don't swing that many times, or you want to make sure you've got mobility in the hip and the upper back and strength in the hip or glutes as well. And those are two keys to knee happiness. It may not solve lack of cartilage or degeneration in the knee, but strong glutes will prevent it from being off track, which will make it worse. And the more strength you've got around surrounding joint muscles, the less stress that joint itself has to take on. Donna says, how do you feel about sourdough bread? I make it myself with good quality flour and salt. I know it's gut friendly and less inflammatory than typical bread, but is it considered a bad carb? I eat probably one good size slice each day. Donna, I think I'm going to have to try it. So I'll give you my address and you send a loaf over and I'll let you know. Okay. So here's the thing. So it's just a slippery slope of good and bad. And, I think there is, like with exercise, there's ideal. I could paint an ideal picture for you, but if you say then, but when can I go to bar Pilates? And I'm like, oh my God. It doesn't actually sit with longevity, but if you love it, we need to find a place for it. And I'd say the same thing about sourdough. If you would miss it, you love it. I think find a place for it. I'd love for the majority of all of our resistant carbs, our better carbohydrates to come from whole foods, something that was recently, grown with sunshine and light and dirt and, harvested. But even that is a little tricky these days, right? If it gets grown somewhere and sits on a truck and then in a refrigerator and then finally at your house, it's been a long time. So did we lose some nutrients there? So I think there's also something to be said for things you make in your own kitchen and you put your hands in and on. There's something that goes in that ingredient that is beyond, the dough and the salt and what you're doing. So I would say, how is it sitting for you? How is it? And if you love it, you enjoy it, there's room for it. So I hope that helps. It's not a definitive answer, but I don't think it's good or bad. And I think you just look at how are you doing? And probably if you really would miss it, you are by having a little bit every day, taking the power out of that food. So, for some of you who might be eliminating bread 100%, thinking it's evil, and the devil, it might be getting more power than it deserves. And so finding a place to have peace with it might be the better route for you to go. Hope that helps. Alice said, are there examples? And Alice, I'm going to have to scroll back here to see. Oh, examples of VO2. So there are interval videos, and those videos that are in there are things with no equipment. So there are some low impact move videos that are knee repeaters, punches that are having you move very quickly and rapidly, but trying to eliminate the impact for those of you that don't want to jump or can't jump for one reason or another. There are other moves that are very high impact. We're doing squat jumps or lunge jumps from one foot to the other. And then there's some kind of combination. So there are, and if you have something at home or access in a gym, or you've got the outdoors, I have two huge hills here. So I have no choice, and I'm doing a little interval training, like it or not. But you can go up and down if you find a steep hill. Often that will do it. And if it doesn't quite do it, but you have a weighted vest, wearing the weighted vest on the steep hill sometimes does it. And we call those repeats. If we do them in running or for our runners, we have them, go up for a minute or for 30 seconds, turn around and walk back down slowly to recover. Do it again, power up for 30 seconds. And turn around and recover very slowly. So that's another option, or using your or a elliptical or treadmill or bike if equipment is available to you. So I hope that helps. Lacey said cortisol rises early morning and falls later in the day. Is that based on time of day or on the individual? Thinking about shift workers. Yeah, shift workers are screwed. Pardon my French. But there is no doubt that someone who works the night shift really struggles. And we see that it's across the board. And honestly, people in healthcare are the worst because they're doing those shifts or getting up at, 3 in the morning to go to work. And it's a real struggle. So the ideal is, yes, that your cortisol is highest at 8 a.m. and it's lowest at 2 a.m. And so it comes up in the morning. It's what would naturally wake you if you could. We can't all do that, but then it slowly declines overnight. So everybody's looks slightly different, but in general, it is kind of a bell curve that comes up, comes down, cycles down. And those people who are shift workers, the ideal is that you're not flip-flopping back and forth. I worked for a long time when I was in undergrad and grad school with 3M employees who had a fitness program, and I would go out. I didn't do this for very long because it killed me, it wrecked me. And they wanted to exercise at the end of their shift. Some of them got up at 11 at night, and so they wanted to work out. So I was in college and dumb enough to say, yes, I'll do it for $20 an hour. That's great pay, and not thinking a bit about my health. But they would have 3 week cycles where they would be on nights and then they would be on days. And that is probably harder than consistently being on nights. And if some of you have done it, I think it's really hard. My son started his first job out of college. I think he was working for Amazon, and he was working nights. And we had told him his entire college career, golf would help him. It'd be an asset. He was a college golfer, and he got nights because his manager wanted him on her team. She was the night manager. It backfired. So he now doesn't listen to us for advice ever anymore. Carolyn said, I had a cranky knee and the glute challenge helped me tremendously. Thank you for adding that. That's great. Really good to know. And Carolyn, maybe you can vouch for this. The work that you do, the most important work and the foundation in that glute challenge is the stuff you do on the floor that is the wake-up call. The muscles in there that need the wake-up just have ADD. We're not using all of them. The biggest muscle in the body, and there's three different segments, the medius, the minimus, and the maximus, but the minimus we don't even talk about because it comes along for the ride in both the other cases. But the medius is really lazy, and we really need things that you could do if you have the opportunity to lie on the floor while you're watching a movie or in the family room, in the evening. It's not strenuous. It's just, I need to do it regularly, and that's the benefit. Lacey said, when you download something on the app, it's on the app, not the device, correct? It's downloaded on my tablet. I could still play it on my phone. Another app question, is there a way to add other things to the calendar, like a hike or rest recovery day? That I don't know. So really good questions. And I'm going to take a screenshot of this. So hang on one second here. So when you download something, it lives offline for you. So if you cancel your membership, obviously the things that you're downloading, like videos, that will disappear for you, even though you might be using them offline while you're a member. They will disappear from your use. So yes, in a sense, yes, they're still on the app, but you can get to them if you've got no internet service. You can still access them. The PDFs that come with programs and resources, those, if you download, they're yours, right? I am not going to come over there and chase you down. I'm not the PDF police, I promise you. Okay. So I hope that helps. I did not answer your full question. In terms of other things, I don't believe so, because I even can't put like an outside link from Zoom directly on there. It has to be, it's live streaming from the app itself. So I'm guessing if I pay the bills there and they won't even let me do it, I'm guessing they're not going to let you put a hike on there either. But it's a great question, and I have a meeting set up next week with them so I can ask that. Ariane says incisional hernia with mesh operation, and there we go. Last Wednesday, feeling pretty good. Surgeon, okay, some lightweight upper body training and just as long as no core. So seated, not sure how to incorporate that. Also was doing 10 to 25 pound dumbbells, doing stronger three suggestions. I'm going stir crazy. Okay. All right. And also walking and using my walking pad and getting my steps in. So that's great. And after any kind of core surgery, back surgery, walking is one of the absolute best things that you can do. So keep that up. I would back way off on your weights, just err on the conservative side. The last thing you want to do is regret doing too much too soon after a surgery. So err on the conservative side. And right now, make sure you're thinking, I should finish feeling like I could have done more. That's a perfect place to be when you're in recovery and coming back, knowing, okay, I'm on the right track. And what I challenge you to do is look at this as this is an opportunity to really focus on contracting the muscles, getting in there and getting access to the small muscles, because some of those things, when we pick up a heavier weight, we're definitely working more on strength and more in power. It's true. But here, you now have an opportunity given to you. Think of it as a gift that you can really focus on the contraction and sometimes backing off of the weight that you can do and coming back to a lighter weight. You get a hold of muscles in places that you otherwise wouldn't. And what's going to happen is when you recover fully and you've got the green light to come back to your weights at the appropriate strength or load that you're used to, you're going to get even better results from having done it. I know this because when I do when I create a batch of videos for you, maybe with a program, we sometimes I'll have a videographer and we'll film them in a day and we'll do multiple. So I'm not picking up my heaviest weight every time. But I realize that I need to do this more often is usually what I tell myself when we're done, because I'm feeling muscles I otherwise wouldn't. I'm feeling the pieces that I otherwise wouldn't. So realize that when you turn on the big muscles and they take over, the little ones, the global stabilizers, don't come out and play. They're just like, ah, they've got it. So think of it as an opportunity for that. And I would do as much as you can seated. So instead of standing in that bent over row, so you don't have to incorporate the core stability, sit down, hinge forward from your hip for that bent over row instead. Yes, absolutely. And as you come through videos that might have a renegade row in it, meaning you're in a plank and doing that row, leave that one out. I would substitute, and you have this if this, then that mentality. So you're going to, again, sit in the chair, hinge forward, 30 degree angle. And so you're using the back muscles, lying on the floor for your chest press should be okay. So you're not doing any core work to do it. The majority of your core work would be getting back down on the floor. You're actually stabilizing a little, getting down and up. So just be cautious of that and take it slow. And here's the other thing. So while you're probably trying to work a little harder or chomping at the bit to slow down, and that might be that you don't go with me and match my pace, or that you, if I do 20 repetitions, you do 10. I do two reps and you're only going to do one. That will make that light weight you're using feel like more load. We call that tempo training, and you find it in some of the videos. But that is a great way to say, here's how I can reach muscle fatigue, even though I'm not picking up a heavy weight. And again, that one can be a surprise to how intense that can help things reach fatigue and feel harder. So I hope that was helpful. Carolyn says, I think this is back to the glute challenge. Absolutely, I could barely lift one leg off the floor while sitting up straight. The other one was fine. Sweet. Okay. All right. Questions? Who else has one? I think I've caught up. If I have missed yours and you dropped something in there, please let me know. Donna says the Apple Watch gives a VO2 max number. I know this can't be completely accurate, but it is an easy way to get some information. Just wondering if it's a reliable way to track growth. Yeah, and that's how I would treat it too, Donna. So, like I would tell you, if you have a Renfro scale or you have another, insert your own brand. A lot of times people used to, I don't hear anybody do this in our community as much anymore. So I think you all are way ahead of the curve. But often people would say, is that even accurate? And I'm like, I don't even care. Like, because the real point is if you get on your same scale in your bathroom at home now and next week and the week after that, maybe it's not calibrated right, but it's calibrated the same way each time. So it is showing change. And if you were, you know, it was reading 33% body fat, or it was reading 31, and in reality, that's it was one or the other. If you went to the DEXA scan at your medical clinic and they were testing it for you, all it is same information. Nothing changed about the way you feel or the habits you have. You know internally, if this isn't my ideal weight, this is not where I feel the best, and we want to change habits, we still know that. So after all, you're going to get is a label, like you're in this category or you're in this category, and maybe being in a category is not necessary. We don't need to label you as, you know, you're here or you're here, as long as we know I want to change because I know I'll feel healthier if we make this change. We just want to see the difference in it. And you're going to get that from any scale. So similarly with the VO2 max, here's what it is right now. And I would collect the other numbers. Go to the scorecard. I did a call this afternoon with someone, and I think you're here. And she had her number, so she's done the test from the scorecard, which I love. So from your cardiovascular test, taking your resting heart rate. If you know my cardiovascular fitness, I haven't been focusing on that, and I really want to focus on that. Take your resting heart rate first thing in the morning. Three times this week. Take the average. If it's very similar, you're good to go. If it's not, it's very different, I would take it for 5 days and do a good average of that. And then say, I'm committed to doing these things to focus on my cardiovascular fitness for this next 4 weeks, and then take it again. And I know some of us, you'll have it right here. You can see it every day, but track that and then do a little interval training. And you check that heart rate at the end of the interval. So you know exactly where it was at the peak. And then 1 minute later, take your heart rate or check on it. And you want to see how far did that fall? How many beats difference was it? Did your heart rate come down 20 beats, 10 beats, 30 beats? What was the improvement? Because the faster we recover after a stressor like that, the more indication again that we have greater cardiovascular fitness, we're more resilient. It's like your heart saying, Yeah, you did an interval. What else you got? No big deal, right? So if you're struggling, you're a beginner, it's going to take you a longer runway to recover. So that's another one. Doing the mile walk is another good one. So you going to a track is going to be the best and the easiest. You can say, okay, I'm going to start on the inside lane. I'm going to walk this. If it's a quarter mile track, you're going to do it four times and go as fast as you can after you're warmed up, and then do a start stop. And you're going to look at how long did that take me? And that's another great challenge. So then you have to be doing something between now and say next month. But those other measures are also now look at. What does Apple Watch say to you about your VO2 number? And what is your heart rate telling you? Your resting? What is your recovery from intervals telling you? And what is your speed in walking telling you? Now it's like getting on a scale and doing your weight, doing your body composition or seeing your muscle mass as well, and doing girth measurements and seeing all of those things change. Now we're really collecting the data about what is going on. So you've got more information to process. So great question. Thank you for that discussion. I'm just going to get some light on. I keep looking at all those memes that say next month by 7:40 it will still be light out. And I'm like, when is that coming again? When is that coming? I could be in my pajamas as soon as it's dark. So I'm a fun girl over here. All right. The Apple Watch got that one. Amy says, as a matter of fact, I'm in week five of Stronger Three. You were talking about tempo, but I could use some extra explanation about it. So, tempo training is basically, so think about the phases that we usually think about when we do a contraction. So let's say, imagine I'm lying on the floor right now. Of course, I'm not, but imagine I were lying on the floor. I've got dumbbells in my hands and I'm pushing out. We call that the concentric contraction. So I'm against gravity and then I come back down. And so we usually do that one faster, a little more explosive, and then we slowly come down and control it. So there's really two phases. I'm not doing anything else. But with tempo training, we make it four phases, a little bit more like a box or a rectangle, really. So I might say, okay, we're going to go out, we're going to pause at the end, we're going to come back, and we're going to pause at the end. But in each of those phases, I'm going to extend it. So I might say, I want you to do a two count out. I'm going to have you hold it here for two counts. I'm going to have you lower it down for four counts because this one gets much more fun when you go slow. That's where muscle soreness actually creeps in, but we also gain the most strength there. Then I might hold it here for two counts. And if I had the same weight that I did, the push and then slowly coming back down, and then the tempo training by comparison, I would get much more tired quicker, my muscles, not the whole body, but the muscles would reach fatigue much more quickly in fewer repetitions doing the tempo training than if I were doing the just coming up and coming back. And it's a little bit easier to check out mentally when you just push and you come back. You can do the groceries in your head while you're doing that one. You can think about what am I going to make for supper. You can do all kinds of things. But when you do tempo training, you mentally have to check in because you're going slow. You kind of have to count them. You're going to hold them. You're going to come back and you're going to hold it again at the end point. And your muscles are under tension for longer. So even with the same load, or in our hernia example, you have to go with a lighter load because of an injury or recovery from something like this. You can reach muscle fatigue with a lighter load doing something like this. So it's a great way to go for those of you who are wanting more bone density, more strength and metabolism boost, but can't go heavier because of arthritis or a joint issue or a current or previous injury. All great reasons to do tempo. So hope that helps. Deborah Rick says, hope this is okay to ask, but would it be possible to order protein powder on subscription every other month to help reduce postage costs? That's a great option. We don't have it in there now, but it's most likely something we could build. So thanks for asking. But yeah, and that's a great consideration. Clarification. I would purchase enough protein powder for 2 months to ship every other month instead and continue with the subscription price. Yes, I love it. Thank you so much for asking. So that is something that I can ask the team about. I'm writing this down because I will not remember it if I don't. Thank you for asking, though, Deborah. And I think it was you who just asked about the calcium content in the protein powders, and we were just looking that up. So I am asking for the details from where I get my raw materials to make it. There's negligible calcium in it because neither one of them are dairy products. So the pea protein doesn't have a lot of calcium, but if you're asking because you're limited in the amount of calcium that you can have, or for some reason, and the other one is the beef protein. So, and of course, the collagen is the last, but neither of those are dairy products. So they're not going to have much at all. Just let me scroll here. Carolyn, I think you're next. During the masterclass, I shared that I have recently been diagnosed with lipoprotein A. You mentioned that I should add omegas. Do you mean omega-3 supplements? If so, do you have a recommendation? I do. And first, and let me say this very clearly, so I'm not a registered dietitian, definitely not yours, and not even a nutritionist. So in two states in the United States, you can be a nutritionist, which means you can say anything you want to, and it's all okay. So what I do know and can share with you is that there's a lot of scientific literature out there, and I have shared much of it and cannot tell you the citations off the top of my head. But if you went and did a search for omega-3s on the site, generally some blog or podcast will come up helping you with that. But omega-3 is related to decreasing inflammation, and the majority of us have a ratio of 3 to 6. There's an optimal range of about 1 to 3 to 4. So 3 should be the one, and then the 3 or 4 should be the sixes. That 1 to 3 or 4 is an ideal ratio for good health. Most of us are 1 to 20. And if you think of it this way, omega-6 turns on the inflammation faucet. Now, it does some good things too, But it turns on inflammation, and omega-3 turns it off. So if we get out of proportion there, we've probably got much more omega-6 in our system. The challenge with trying to get it all from diet, which our two greatest sources of exclusively omega-3 are salmon and olive oil. The other sources throughout our diet, nuts and other
There's
things.
hardly anything left. And
Whoops.
I
Whoop. I'm gonna make sure everybody's muted. The other sources in our food and diet all are higher in six than in three. So if we try to eat it exclusively, unless we were doing salmon almost all the time and olive oil again almost all the time, we don't want to overdo them either. We're going to still have a skewed omega-3 to six. And for a while, remember, we were all fearful of that. Then we got used to it, but we got so used to it, we were having a lot of nuts and seeds, which kind of skewed that again. So omega-3 supplementation kind of helps you bring that back down, decreasing the inflammation, and can be very related. So I've got a good friend who's actually young, but she inherited that from her parents and genetics as well. And she checks her omega-3 to 6 very regularly for that reason. So she can look at, do I need more omega-3? And can I help myself by doing that? So the brand that I use is called Nordic Naturals. It's certified by sports. So NSF just means National Sports Foundation has, it's like a third party has tested it rigorously, making it okay for athletes to use. So that's a good sign. And the reason that's important is omega-3s, if you're not careful and you don't know it's from a reputable company, many of them are rancid when we buy them. The way to know, and you have to be careful with this, do it outdoors and not in, is to take one of the capsules, one of the gel capsules, and prick it with a pin. And when it comes out, it will either smell like rancid fish or it's just gonna smell fishy. But if it smells obviously like rancid fish, it probably is. So I think you're fairly safe with a brand like Nordic Naturals. So that's what I use. And I've mentioned earlier this year, I think you're going to hear a lot about it. I am at a health conference in New York City this next week, and I am after, I've got a dilemma because I think the panel that I'm on actually coincides with a presentation about omega-3s, so I cannot attend. But we're going to hear more and more about omega-3 as helping to decrease inflammation because so many of us are dealing with it. As we age and the population age, and particularly women going through menopause, when we lose estrogen, we have greater inflammation just systemically that we have to deal with. So I hope that was helpful. I will tell you how I think about omega-3s. So the recommended is DHA and EPA. These are the two types that you really want. So the combined amounts of the two of those in a supplement should be 1,000. So that is recommended daily. However, you know, if we are have this skewed view, you know, of we're higher, generally what we want to do is fill that hole. We have to fill it or close the gap. When I was, you know, feeling either aches and pains from joints, muscles, because I was training really hard and or living in the mountains at altitude, which can decrease synovial fluid a little bit and change things, I would 2 to 3 times that amount every day. And just to give you some literature and science on this. So, in terms of safety, 6 to 9 grams is often given in hospital patients who maybe have traumatic injury, brain injuries for sure. It's also used in clinical studies where people have severe knee pain, osteoarthritis, degeneration, and those higher doses have found no negative side effects. We know that omega-3 helps your muscle, your bone, and your brain health. So, I say that not to suggest you do 6 to 9 times the, but to give you a no negative side effects at that much. So if I am not using it at all, I would start with just the basic. But if you're not noticing any improvement, you might want to, if it were me, I would test. I'm going to take one in the morning and one at night, one dose, and see how I do then. And I might bump it up. So again, three wasn't uncommon for me when I was in the heat of training because I knew I was causing my own inflammation and needed to bring it down in order to train again in time. Another echo, Linda said, I like the subscription every 2 months as I order one pea, one paleo to have during a month. Carolyn said, thank you for that info. You're very welcome. Okay. I think that's it. Top of the hour. Anybody have one more question? Let me know. And I believe, just saying this out loud, I believe that someone let us know that the summary, the call summary last week, some, for some reason, when you click on it, wasn't giving you the actual words. It looked like a code or an error. We're trying to figure out why that is because it's working fine on my end. So they're just checking to make sure somebody just didn't have fat thumbs putting that in there. But it all should be working fine. So I readily assumed it was my fault, but went to check and it was not. So, all right. We'll get that fixed as soon as we can figure it out. And thank you so much, all of you, for joining me and everybody watching the replay. Most likely, thanks you too for the great questions and supporting them who couldn't be here. I'm going to answer one more question for someone who couldn't be here, wanted to share their labs and have me interpret. I just want to make sure that you realize I am not a physician, number one, but number two, I'm not your physician. So I could not review labs with you. If I were working one-on-one with any of you and you had done labs, we might take a look at them together based on your doctor, your physician who ordered them, what the reason was, what the doctor came back with, so that we knew what they were. But the most important thing was the things we touched on earlier today. What are your symptoms? Because that's what I teach in the menopause fitness specialist training. We teach the health coaches and trainers to identify your signs and symptoms are telling us a lot. We're not, I would never, if I were a physician, I would never probably solely prescribe you a certain dose of estrogen, testosterone, or progesterone based on that. Some do, by the way, you can mail it in, but I wouldn't necessarily do that myself. And yet it's, are you sleeping? Are you, how's your appetite? Do you have one? Do you have cravings? Are you digesting? Do you have constipation, diarrhea, gas, or bloating? Are you focusing? Great concentration? Are you in a good mood? How's your libido? All of these things are actually related and hint at how could we or should we manipulate your exercise. When I know, what have you most recently been doing and how has that gone? Then I have a little bit more information and I can help you. But reading your labs is not directly going to help me with your exercise prescription. And I'm not a physician. So realize I can't actually look at your labs and do anything with them that's going to be helpful. I would need the other questions to really be helpful for you. We might, if we were looking at your cortisol levels or a cortisol graph, be able to say, okay, when are you exercising? And give you a change or suggest a change there. But otherwise, it's really 100% we can get much more accurate by how are you feeling? And that you can come to me with. So if you say, I'm in peri or postmenopause, here's how I'm feeling, here's what I've been doing recently. Here's how that went. And that kind of data is the most helpful in getting me to be able to say, here's what I would do next. And here's what I would try. If that doesn't go well, we can kind of help you program that way. So, hope that was helpful in just getting your questions answered appropriately. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for joining me.